This is Once for All, where Jude 3 says, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. Listen in as the faith held by believers of all times is now delivered to you.
Closer and closer to election season, and we are getting closer and closer to the day that those ballots appear in your mailboxes. We want to focus on matters of Oregon today. Hello, thank you for tuning in to this edition of Once for All. My guest for the program will have a familiar voice to the airwaves. Representative Carl Wilson represents District 3 in the Oregon House of Representatives for the state legislature. Representative Wilson, it's great to have you in studio.
Thank you. It's great to visit. You know, I've done interviews with you in some unique places. My apartment in Salem, the cab of my pickup, and here I get to come see you today.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you in.
Thank you.
Tell us what it's like in a day in the life of a state representative, staying there in Salem and going to the state capitol to argue our section's state's perspective on Oregon laws.
Well, it is an exhausting job if you do it correctly, and most people I know do it correctly. It takes a tremendous amount of time. Your days, especially in the first 3 to 4 months of session, are at least 10 hours and many times 12 hours. You have to be prepared to meet lobbyists and advocates for a million different issues, be somewhat conversant in almost all of them. And then, of course, there's battling through the sickness that always moves through the Capitol in the early parts of session. It's called the Capitol crud, and most people are sick. It's really just an incredible thing, and it is truly a gathering spot for the whole state. People come from all four corners of the state talking about their issues. And, of course, as you mentioned, we spend a lot of time talking about our rural Oregon issues, especially Southwest Oregon. But really, all of us in rural Oregon have the same issues, and that is we're being ignored by upstate.
As you look back on the last term, what's maybe a high and low from the last couple of years?
Well, I would say the low is pretty easy to describe, and that's the fact that my party, the Republican Party, is thoroughly dominated by the Democrats in both chambers, the House and the Senate. The governor is a Democrat. Secretary of State is a Democrat. Treasurer is a Democrat. And so it's just one-party rule. On a given day when we have many issues that have nothing to do with party philosophy, we all play together well and do fine. But then there are those sentinel issues, so the gun issues, the property rights issues, and things like that. In many cases, the extraction industry issues, whether we're talking mining or timber, we just have an absolute and total impasse with the other side, and that leads to a tremendous amount of frustration there. Many times Republicans just call themselves speed bumps in the legislative process. And with the numbers the way they are now, that's kind of the way it is. But there is a hidden joy in it all, and that is what you can do for your constituents and what you can do for your community, what you can do to bring opportunity for your area. And that is the thing that keeps you coming back for more.
As we move forward from here, what's most important for Oregon and what's most important for Southern Oregon?
Well, I would love for the upstate legislators, and that would be the Democrat Party for the most part, I would love for them to understand that there are truly two Oregons. There is urban Oregon and there is rural Oregon, and they need to at least pay us a little lip service along the way to make us feel better about our situation, but they don't even do that. They really don't care to do that, and that's a shame, because a governor in this state of Oregon has a wonderful privilege of being inclusive and realizing that there is a rural Oregon, that is three quarters of the landmass, basically, and that these people need some help. They need some understanding, and we just rarely get that.
Let's talk about jobs. In Southern Oregon, we find our high school graduates, after going off to college, usually don't return to the area, but go to upstate to start their careers. What does it take in Southern Oregon to have those jobs that would be career-starting jobs where I could start a family with?
Well, I think in many cases it involves our education system. And you'll notice that at long last, everyone is finally deciding, hey, wait a minute, those vocational classes that we took back in the 60s and 70s and in 80s, those kept a lot of kids interested in school and interested in life after school. Many of them wonder why they go to school on a regular basis, and I think we all, for better or for worse, had those feelings at times when we were going to junior high and high school. You know, why am I learning
right.
this? And there wasn't often a real good answer for that. But, you know, we're going back. We're starting to look at programs like CTE, Career Technical Education, and STEM, Science, Technology. I forget what it is. But nonetheless, people are realizing, wait a minute, we need to restore to the classroom the kinds of things that we grew up with that in many cases kept us interested in coming to school, something that isn't happening in Oregon very much these
days. So instead of learning about how to be a good plumber or electrician, I'm learning some more abstract thought, you know, history of gender neutrality or something like that. And those aren't necessarily pushing people into career-oriented jobs.
Yeah, you know, and I think we all want a well-rounded education. There are a number of the social sciences the kids need to know and so forth, and that's great. But many of them need that something else, which would be vocational training, business training of some kind to prepare them and keep them interested in life after high school.
You mentioned this disconnect between the rural parts of Oregon and Portland, Salem, Beaverton, and the rest. Talk about the issue of natural resources and how that disconnect leaves Oregonians living in the rural parts without jobs and
sure.
the resources they need.
Yeah, that's a good question and a good track to go down here. The extraction industries have always been important to rural Oregon. I mean, Josephine County was based on mining, and that's how it was for many, many years. Timber came after mining. But those industries are important to the livelihoods of so many people in this state, and they have been for years. And so we find it nearly impossible to engage in logging any longer, and that has had a quantifiable effect in Josephine County, Jackson County, Curry County, and so many others. And there is no sympathy for us that we can do this on a sustainable basis. We can log on a sustainable basis. We can mine on a sustainable basis. We know we can do that. It's been proven we can do that. But yet the other team won't face that at all. They just say there's no room for the extraction industries, the resource-based industries. There's no room for it. And that's a shame because, you know, to tell rural Oregon that there is no room for cutting timber sustainably, there is no room for mining whatsoever. I mean, that's like telling Kansas no room for corn. You know, it's utterly ridiculous. And the difference is we know we can do it on a sustainable basis, but the other side won't sustain that thought for a minute. And so as a result, we have to scramble for scraps. And that's exactly what we're relegated to in rural Oregon. I mean, look at the fishermen. Pressure on fishing. I mean, where can you go that the Democrat Party, for the most part, is not putting pressure to stop that activity? So basically, that just turns us into a bunch of concessionaires, for the most part, hoping to sell trinkets to tourists who we hope will stop by.
Let's talk for a moment about Josephine County. I, as a resident of Jackson County, don't necessarily have a primary dog in the fight, so I watch this as an outsider. In matters of funding public safety, one thing that I've noticed as an outsider is that election after election, ballot after ballot, this is really serving of just dividing the residents of Josephine County more and more. What's the solution for that in Josephine County?
Well, you know, I think ultimately the issue is going to be settled locally. But the problem is once again, we can't really count on our federal delegation to deliver the goods, because our federal delegation in Congress is basically all Democrat. And I hate to rail on them, but the thing is that they know what our problems are. 4 out of 5 of our congresspeople know what our problems are in rural Oregon. It's one of those things. And they don't do anything about it, where we have one congressman, Walden, who tries to do something about it. You've got 2 senators. You've got Merkley and Wyden, who understand very well what's going on in rural Oregon, but they can't seem to deliver the goods when it comes to allowing us an increased timber cut. So we're going to have to grow our way through this, apparently, and it's going to be extremely slow, because we're going to do it apart from mining and apart from cutting timber. And so I suspect that ultimately the answer is going to be through taxes. And of course, in Josephine County, that's an emotional issue for a number of reasons. But one of those reasons is very plain, and that is that we have a very high degree of poverty in Josephine County. We have people who $50 a month, $25 a month, is going to make a huge difference for the worse in their lifestyle. And that's one of the big emotional issues here, is the genuine poverty that exists, not by our fault, but the fault of others. And it forces us to continually look at increasing the property tax, which itself is, again, a very emotional issue. I do think ultimately it's going to get figured out somehow and in some way. But there's going to be a whole lot of name-calling and blame-shifting and cat-calling along the way until we figure out what this is.
Like it or not, something that's boomed in the last 2 years is marijuana in Oregon. We see in the city of Rogue River, 3 medical marijuana marijuana businesses in general, 4th on the way. And a local realtor told me that it's hard to find that house on 1 or 2 acres that people are moving to Oregon to buy, quite frankly, because pot growers are buying those properties as soon as they're on the market. As we look back on this day, 10 years, 20 years from now, what will we think about our introduction of recreational marijuana?
Probably no big thing. The cows are out of the barn. It will become normalized 10 years from now. It will be fully normal. I think 5 years from now, it will be fully normalized. There was a vote. The people voted to legalize it. And a group of 10 people was put together to try to develop a structure around it. I was fortunate enough to be one of those 10. And so I do think, honestly, we'll look at it as no big thing. It's something coming out of Prohibition. It's still the Wild West. It's the Klondike. It's Sutter's Mill, 1849. It's all of those things together. It's still running wild and free in lots of areas. But I think in 2 to 3 years, the players, the unlawful players will have been all approached and told to get legal or get out of the business. And so I think it'll take 2 to 3 years, but ultimately I think it will be normalized and it will be probably no big thing. It will bring with it health issues. We fully expect that. Anytime you normalize something like that, it will probably have a social cost to it. I don't think it'll be the end of life as we know it, but nonetheless, there will be, I think, a social cost to legalizing what we call adult use marijuana. I look at the medical program somewhat differently. I have sat there for 2 years listening to testimony about the medical use of marijuana. I know the program has been misused, greatly so, by some people who simply do want to get high, who've got a pain somewhere, and they convince a doctor that they need this product. But yet, when we look at the health aspects of cannabis, I am a believer in that. I absolutely am. And I think it can do far more than we even know. But once again, I do think the program has been misused. And it will take, it's going to take a few years to get things figured out.
Is the medical program still necessary with the passing of recreational? I mean, once a prescription drug becomes over the counter, do you still need a prescription?
I think it is still necessary to do it, primarily for the low-end patients and the people that don't have much money, because they'll always be able to buy marijuana or get marijuana for a lower price from their own grower than they will if they even allowed to buy tax-free in a dispensary like they are. I think it will be a much higher cost for them to buy through a dispensary than it will be through an arrangement with their own grower. So I do think for the protection of patients, especially here in the next couple of years, till we find an equilibrium, I think it's necessary to keep a separate program on the medicinal side.
Okay. Let's talk about the government and its role in the lives of Americans. I'd like to know your thoughts on what brought national attention to Burns, Oregon this year. Now, I think you and I would agree that there's probably right ways to go about things and wrong ways to go about things, and taking over a wildlife refuge is probably the wrong way to go about things. However, what put those farmers and ranchers in that situation was prosecution for a controlled burn that gets out of hand and crosses over to federal land. When BLM has cases of a controlled burn getting out of hand, even causing property damage, and there being little to no repercussion. What are your thoughts on that issue?
Well, it's a stacked deck, unfortunately. And once again, we go back to the urban-rural divide here in the state of Oregon, and certainly taking over a refuge is not the way to go. I'm a legislator, and I believe in legislation and doing it the right way. But what did happen did serve notice that there are a number of people getting exceedingly angry with the slow pace of change and the stacked deck that you have with the federal government and the state of Oregon. The whole issue of federalism, and that is the relationship between the state government and federal government, is totally out of control. If it were not for government funds, what would we actually be able to buy here in the state of Oregon? The all funds budget, which includes the federal money, my goodness, we are so highly dependent upon the federal government. You know, it's funny, I introduced a bill in the last session that would basically, and I'm paraphrasing, just say to the state of Oregon, we'd like to see what your written plan is in case we would lose substantial federal funds. And the other team didn't even want to hear it. You know, because they have just determined that our relationship with the federal government is here to stay in the way that it currently is. And that is that we've sold out to the federal government by taking so many federal dollars that this unholy relationship is going to continue and only gain impetus as we go. And I think we can all see that. And so that frustrates a lot of people to the point of doing some things that are inadvisable. But again, we're telling Salem, for the most part, and to a degree, Washington, D.C., come on, hear us out here.
So without even a plan, we've made ourselves bondservants to the feds.
We just absolutely are. And we can't, you can't get a hearing on a bill that says, hey, show us your written plan in case the feds would, through a burp in the economy or something, cut off their funds. What's our plan? And the answer was, don't want to hear that bill.
That's constructive. Now, being a pastor, some of the issues that are always on my radar are those social issues. I never thought it'd come to this, but we're having conversations about who can use what restroom. Oregon seems to always be on the cutting edge of this degradation, moral degradation. Is there any chance that we can see that slowed or even reversed in the coming years?
Not with a Democrat one-party rule. They absolutely will fight to the death to protect anything that you and I, as a literal Bible-believing and following people, would stand for. They want no part of that. I mean, we're going back now, and even like we did in the last session, go back and take a look at sweeping all of the terms of gender out of the marital statutes. So we're not just you know, we haven't just sacked the quarterback. We're doing a victory dance over that the quarterback at this point. But, you know, so until there is any change in leadership, we'll keep going down the path that we are when it comes to LGBTQ issues. You know?
Concerning the abortion issue, Oregon has no restrictions on abortions whatsoever, beyond that of what is federally the case. And I'm wondering if those representing the people are voicing the same opinion on the issue of abortion. This last election, we were hoping to see a vote, a measure to defund, not use state tax dollars to go to paying for abortions. And this was delayed by a legal technicality by the likes of NARAL and Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. Do the voters in Oregon, are they by and large pro-choice or pro-life?
Well, I don't know. I wish I could tell you that. I wouldn't be at all surprised in the state of Oregon if this is solidly a pro-choice state. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I don't hear much about that issue any longer because most people believe that as long as the Democrat Party is so solidly in charge, there's not going to be any room whatsoever for even any discussion. You know, I sponsored a bill in the last session that would deny government funds to perform sex change operations on kids 15, 16, and 17 years old. It seems to be, and there seems to be a rush in the state of Oregon to rush these kids into surgery or hormone therapy as fast as you can. And that frustrates me. We can't control anything in the private market there, but we certainly, when it comes to state funds, we ought to be able to say, now, wait a minute, let's stop and think about this. Do we want to rush 15, 16, and 17-year-old kids into surgery that is a very controversial surgery? I mean, tremendously controversial. Do we want to rush them to that? And, you know, when most of us think about how we were at age 15, 16, and 17 years old, were we ready to make life-altering decisions at that point in time? Well, not according to my parents, I wasn't. And that's kind of the way it went. And so that frustrates me. We ought to be able to have a reasonable discussion about that, but that wasn't given a hearing.
Well, and alongside of that bill was the one that passed restricting young people under 18 who might want to talk to a therapist about, you know, homosexual thoughts and tendencies and attractions, that a therapist cannot actually counsel that person away from their homosexual thoughts or tendencies or attractions. And it seems like what has lost the concern of the legislator, at least from our perspective, is the care and concern for these people and really just pushing a political agenda no matter who it leaves in the tracks.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting the procedures that are allowed versus the conversations not allowed to take place. And it's interesting, you know, the legislature votes on this issue and it's to take a treatment modality off the table that involves talking. Can't do it. You know, can't talk, but we're going to let them make a life-altering decision about changing their gender at age 15, 16, or 17 years old.
Yeah.
Strange.
Very bizarre. Governor Kate Brown has been our unelected governor for the last 3 years, taking office after the Kitzhaber resignation. In your grade book, what grade do you give Governor Brown for performance in the office?
Oh, I'd give her probably, this is going to depend on whether you talk to a Republican or a Democrat, but I would give her a D-, and not an F, because she does show up to work on a regular basis, so I'll give her credit for that. But, you know, the rest of this issue, to me, the most egregious issue here is her lack of desire to do anything for rural Oregon. That continues to be my biggest issue. And if I were the governor of the state of Oregon, which I will never be, but if I were, it would be so delightful to be the governor of all 36 counties and feel just as welcome in Clatsop County as I do in Gillum County, as I do in Multnomah County, Lane, or Josephine. Every one of those people in those counties saying, you know, that governor cares about what we go through here, not just the people who brought the governor to the show, you know. So I would just love to see a governor that was for all of us.
One other issue that we haven't yet talked about is the Second Amendment issue. We saw Senate Bill 941 make a big dent in gun rights in our state. And one thing that I think was precedent setting, correct me if I'm wrong, but how many counties we saw write into Salem saying, we're not planning on enforcing this. Mm-hmm. Is this just another example of how Salem is going to do force their political agenda, completely ignoring what the counties are actually saying?
Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that leads ultimately to bad things. You know, when you get ignored that way, or when your basic doctrines are eroded. And the right to keep and bear arms, that is a serious issue in rural Oregon, should be a serious issue everywhere. But the people who bring the Democrat candidates to the show, the Michael Bloombergs of the world, pay tremendous money to change gun law in this state, and it's rammed down the throats, especially of rural counties. Then you get the sheriff in a number of these counties saying, you know, not going to enforce that. This is the kind of lack of respect you build for the law when the law is ridiculous. You know, you hear lots of conversations these days about jury nullification. You know, people are getting fed up with government just jamming things down your throat. And so, you know, in this situation on 941, rural Oregon just absolutely said, no, not going to do it. And the sheriffs heard that. Many of them saying, I'm not going to enforce it. And I hate to see that, because you see disrespect developing for the law. I hate to do that. We're a nation of laws. And then when you get these doctrinaires in here, they just develop a hatred for law. And that's a shame, because who knows where that stops.
You're listening to Once for All, and we're talking with Representative Carl Wilson, who represents District 3 in the Oregon House of Representatives State Legislature. We're going to be right back, more with Carl Wilson right after this. Don't go away.
So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
Great. It sounds like we don't have a plan.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Visit ready.gov/kids and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Once for All. We're talking with Representative Carl Wilson from the Oregon House of Representatives, and he has agreed to stay on the air and to walk through some of the ballot measures facing Oregon voters this election coming up in November. And Representative Wilson, the first one that we see is Measure 94, which amends the Constitution and eliminates mandatory retirement age for state judges. What do you think about this one?
You know, as I recall, the retirement age is 75 right now. And it's one of those things where I almost wish I could remember how I voted on that referral. I think I voted to have them continue to retire at age 75. And so this is one of those personal choice things. You know, I don't know if there's a right or wrong on that. 95 amends the Constitution, allows investments in equities by public universities to reduce financial risk and increase investments to benefit students. I think the Constitution does not allow our universities to invest on the equity side of things. This would let them do that if passed. Just, you know, your choice.
Sure.
You know, not a make or break thing.
Nope.
96, amending the Constitution, dedicates 1.5% of state lottery net proceeds to funding support services for Oregon veterans. Good idea. We hear horror stories all the time, especially on the federal side, of our veterans being disrespected and ignored. And I think anything we can do to help them is a good idea.
Now, 1.5% of that chunk isn't much.
It's going to be more than you think.
Dollar value, yes. Yep. But as far as what is undesignated, there's a pretty good chunk left.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's plenty. So I think it's a good idea. 97 is the king of ugly, as far as I'm concerned. That is one of the most horrible measures we've had on the ballot in years. This is going to increase the number of state jobs dramatically. It's going to reduce the number of private sector jobs. Believe you me, the legislature does not have to dedicate the money that this measure says we do. We don't have to do it, and the money is liable to go anywhere, and it is going to roll up the cost of government in successive biennia in amazing ways. We can't keep up with that spending.
What would the consumer see if that passes?
Well, the consumer is going to see up to $600 increase to your cost of living every year as a result of that, because I'm here to tell you the corporations are going to pass as much as they can on to consumers. And so really it is a not so hidden sales tax, and it will increase, and I do believe this, the cost of living for families up to $600 per year because of that pass-through effect. It's an ugly measure, and it's been polling favorably for the longest time, but as of today, it is beginning to have problems at the polls, and the no's are starting to say, count us. Here we are. And so it's beginning to slip, and it's polling on the favorable side now. We'll see where that goes. Let's see. 98, requiring state funding for dropout prevention, career and college readiness programs in Oregon high schools. Once again, there is kind of a wave building to put vocational education back in schools again. This would dedicate a certain amount per student. I'm not sure if this is one of those issues where, okay, if it does pass, more money will go per student to vocational training, but it could be reduced elsewhere to make up for that. I think that's a possibility. But nonetheless, I think it's a good measure. I think anything that gets us back to thinking vocational education again is probably a good idea in our public schools. Measure 99 creates outdoor school education fund, continuously funded through the lottery to provide outdoor school programs statewide. Outdoor school has been something that many kids have grown up with going to. The legislature passed a bill, I think, in the last session saying we like this. We like outdoor school. It's a good way to get kids out in the woods to discover another life out there and get them to enjoy what is out there. But the legislature failed to fund it. They said it's a good idea, but we don't have any money for it. And so the advocates for it brought this forward to try to carve some money out for outdoor school. Doesn't create new money for it, but just redirects existing money, as I recall.
Now, one of the opponents for Measure 99 is that of the economic development for Oregon, and they say that the lottery money, when it was established in 1984, was for the purpose of growing the economy.
It was. That was how it came to be.
And their concern, at least, is by sending that money to outdoor education, though they are full support of the program, funding it in this way actually robs money that was dedicated to economic development.
You know, that's a legitimate point to make. I think you can make that point.
Okay.
Measure 100 prohibits the purchase or sale of parts or products from certain wildlife species. I think this is all about the ivory trade. And so vote accordingly, you know, whatever you choose, whatever
sure.
you think. And so then we get into the state races.
Sure. Now, one of the Southern Oregon names that we see on the ballot for state office again is Dennis Richardson. I'm sure you know Dennis Richardson quite well.
I do.
What do you think of that race, Dennis Richardson versus Brad Atkinson? Atkinson.
Avakian.
Avakian, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, Dennis is a good man, and he should be in that position. One of the great reasons he should be there is not just that he's qualified to be there, but I think that I wish upstate would realize that, hey, yeah, this one-party rule has been crazy, and we really need to dilute it a little bit to let the minority party be heard in the state. And so, sure, why not a Republican Secretary of State just to give a little bit of semblance of balance to state government? And so there are several reasons Dennis ought to be there, and those are two of the best, I think.
Sure. Well, we heard your grade for Governor Kate Brown earlier. Any chance that Bud Pierce might have a chance of getting in that office?
Bud has an uphill battle. He's had a difficult last 10 days in the Republican Party when he stepped back from endorsing Donald Trump. That certainly didn't help the down ticket, those of us who are going to be standing with Donald Trump. And then also a misstatement that he made the other day that is getting a lot of play. I'm sure he'd like to walk that back. He tried to walk that back. Walking back is sometimes not successful, and I'm not sure it's successful for Bud. It's not going to change any Republican votes, I doubt, but there had been a possibility, I think, of some crossover. That may dampen some of the crossover vote. It's hard to say. Non-affiliated, I don't know how they'll approach that.
So, sure. Yeah. And then there's the election for President of the United States. We saw our first presidential debate last week. What are your thoughts on that run?
I can't imagine Hillary Clinton as president of the United States of America. We know Hillary Clinton. We know her record of failure for decades. And she does not deserve to be president of the United States. When you think of all the scandals, including Benghazi along the way, and you take a look at this whole email server issue. She obviously was playing fast and loose with security. Fast and loose as Secretary of State in national security. She didn't understand that a C on these messages meant confidential, which is amazing because I had a top secret clearance at 18 and 19 years old serving in the Navy in the Philippines with crypto gear. And I knew every 18-year-old in that comm room knew that C on a message meant confidential. And so having a Secretary of State, my goodness, be ignorant to that fact, it's beyond shocking. Donald Trump, I'm really concerned about Donald Trump. I don't know Donald Trump. I don't know Donald Trump's record as far as government goes. And there are many things about him and some of the things that he says, I think, that are absolutely reckless. But we have two choices in this presidential election. We have Hillary Clinton. We have Donald Trump. And for me, it's not even close. I'll take my chances with Donald Trump because I know who I have in Hillary Clinton, and I don't like it.
Can you explain how Hillary Clinton is running for president? I mean, if you made a list of things you shouldn't do as a political figure, she's done them all.
Yes.
And yet here she is as the very likely possibility of being president of the United States of America.
For the most part, the two parties are forced to live by different standards. And usually the mainstream media makes sure of that. For the most part, I think the mainstream media protects Hillary Clinton in many ways. There have been some things that have been so egregious they can't ignore it. But nonetheless, all of us in party politics realize that there are different standards for the most part for the parties, and we've learned to live with that.
Right. We've been talking with Representative Carl Wilson, representing District 3 in the House for the state of Oregon. Representative Wilson, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure to be here. Always enjoy the invitation.
And that's going to be all the time we have for this edition of Once for All. Thanks for tuning us in. Have a safe weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday on Once for All.
This has been Once for All. You can contact the show by sending an email delivered onceforall@gmail.com. You can listen again to this show or any other episodes by visiting onceforallradio.com. Until next time, stand firm in the faith, once delivered to the saints.